From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Elodie Reed. It's Tuesday, September 20th. Here are today's headlines.
Jewish advocacy organizations are pushing back on the University of Vermont's response to a federal investigation into allegations of anti-Semitism at the school. In a written statement on Friday, 20 organizations, including the American Jewish Committee and the Anti-Defamation League, said UVM President Suresh Garamella's response offered, quote, inadequate excuses. The U.S. Department of Education opened an investigation last week based on a complaint filed in 2021. That complaint details several incidents of alleged discrimination against Jewish students. It also says UVM didn't properly address those incidents. Garamella defended the school's response in a statement last week.
The founders of Ben & Jerry's are accusing the ice cream company's parent corporation of violating terms of the merger that brought them together. Unilever, the owner of Ben & Jerry's, announced in June it was selling the company's business interest in Israel to a local company. That move came after Ben & Jerry's independent board voted to discontinue sales in the West Bank. Speaking on MSNBC on Sunday, Jerry Greenfield said the merger agreement allows the independent board to make decisions related to the company's social mission.
It's about the independent board having the authority to do what it is granted to do in the acquisition agreement.
Ben & Jerry's sued Unilever in federal court in July. The case is still pending. Unilever did not immediately respond to requests for comment. In a June press release, the company said the merger agreement allows it to make financial and operational decisions for Ben & Jerry's.
Vermont is getting more than $63 million in federal aid to help with water infrastructure projects. The money comes from the infrastructure package passed by Congress last year. The funding will go toward projects that have already been approved. That includes removing lead water lines in Springfield and Northfield and cleaning up PFAS contamination in Killington and Bennington. The EPA says Vermont will receive more water infrastructure aid as other projects are approved.
And there are signs of life at the long vacant pit in the center of Burlington. Developers of the site are taking steps to build affordable housing on the property. VT Digger reports last week the partners filed a request to use more than $250,000 in federal grant money to build an eight-story complex. The long-stalled City Place Burlington project would occupy the former site of the Burlington Mall, which was torn down in 2017. The affordable housing units are among 400 total homes that City Place developers want to build on the property.
Coming up, the indelible joy of muskie fishing. More after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to Vita for their support. Vita, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
Statefish biologists recently added 5,000 muskellunge fingerlings to the Missisquoi River in Swanton. Since 2013, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been working to restore this native species in collaboration with a hatchery in New York State. Reporter Erica Heilman went along to watch these fish get introduced to their new home.
Muskellunge, or muskies, look a bit like northern pike, except that they can get a whole lot bigger. They are apex predators with really scary teeth, and they're some of the top trophy sports fish in Lake Champlain. They're also known as the fish of 10,000 casts because they're rare and they're hard to catch, unless, of course, you catch one by accident, which is how most anglers seem to get hooked on muskie fishing. David Beebe caught his first muskie near his farm in Swanton by accident, and he's been fishing for muskie ever since. In 2005, his son Chris Beebe set the record with a 38-pound, 4-ounce muskie measuring 52 inches. Whenever Fish and Wildlife stocks the Missisquoi, Chris and Dave are there to pay homage. So while we waited, Dave and I killed some time in his truck talking about these fish.
I never realized when I was young that I could catch such a fish. And then when I caught one, I said, wow, I can do it.
What's different about catching a muskie than another kind of fish?
Well, a northern pike is similar to them in size, shape, and everything, you know. But the muskie are rarer, and they're big fighters.
I'm not sure I'd want to go swimming with a muskie.
Once in a while, you hear about somebody with feet dangling over a boat, but they won't do it intentionally. No,
But unintentionally, they might bite off one of my toes.
You know, it's very rare that you hear those stories, but it's, I suppose it's possible. You know, don't sit on the dock and get your feet, keep your feet going.
So they are apex predators.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They, you know, they'll eat ducks and they'll take frogs or muskrats or things that are swimming in the water. They'll go after them.
What's the pleasure or what do you get when you get a muskie?
Oh, I can't even explain it. I can't even explain it. It's just, you get the adrenaline going, and it's just such a high. And I think part of the reason we enjoy it is the fact that not many people do it. And muskies aren't, you know, everywhere, so it makes it more interesting to fish for them.
This is Chris Beebe talking about his record muskie.
Well, we were out catfishing, actually. We're up in the Missisquoi, in the refuge. And I cast it out. I saw another log that I wanted to cast on, so I reeled it in. And he followed the lure. He followed the frog that I had on, right behind it. And he hit right here at the boat.
So you were reeling in like, another day catfishing.
Yeah, I saw another log that I wanted to cast onto. So I reeled the lure in. And he came in, hit it right here next to the boat. Yeah, he was big. He was big. I turned around and I told Dad, I said, "Why? I got a big muskie on, I know that." And I told Dad, we only had a little bass net, and I said, "You gotta let him go to the bottom of that thing and try to get it over the top of the boat." So he did, folded the handle in half, the whole deal, getting that thing on the deck. We tackled it like two football players to hold it down.
When you catch the state's biggest muskie, what makes you keep... I mean, isn't it all kind of downhill from here?
No. It's all a matter of how many more do I want to catch.
Finally, the fishery truck arrived with fish biologist Sean Good and fishery manager Kevin Kelsey. They were arriving back from a 36-hour round-trip drive to western New York, where they'd picked up the fish from a hatchery run by the New York Department of Environmental Conservation. For over 10 years, New York has been providing Vermont with muskies when they have a surplus. And since 2009, Vermont Fish and Wildlife has stocked over 60,000 muskie fingerlings in Lake Champlain. Here's Sean Good.
They are the ultimate predator, and that's what makes them so cool. And they're a native fish species to Vermont. Lake Champlain is, the native range of muskie in North America, but it's the easternmost extent of their native range. So Vermont is the only New England state to which muskie were native. Huh. And the Missisquoi River, Missisquoi Bay, was sort of the focal point of that native muskie population for Lake Champlain.
Why do this? Why does this matter?
Protecting native fish populations and native biodiversity of all of our natural resources is a key component to what we do as a Department of Fish and Wildlife. And muskie are a native fish species. They belong here. They evolved here at Lake Champlain. They're part of the native fish community. When we take pieces and links out of our natural communities, there's something missing. And they have been eons a part of Lake Champlain's fish community. So it's really a matter of restoring something that belongs here in the first place.
Kevin drained the tanks and distributed the 5,000 fish between four boats, and these set off into the Missisquoi to introduce the muskies to their new home.
So what we do is we go out here and we look for the habitat, and we just drive very slowly along the river, and we put them out at, five, 10 at a time. We're spreading them out over great lengths of the river, and in addition to avoiding having them be eaten by accidentally putting them on top of a school of bass or something like that, we don't want them to go into the river and be in close proximity to each other, because they are cannibals and they will start eating other fish immediately, and that includes their brothers and sisters. Once they key in on wild, native bait that's out here, forage, small little shiners and minnows, the likelihood of them eating each other drops, very low. So they're going to eat the things that they find the first time they eat in the river.
It rained. Sean and his team put out a few fish at a time. It rained more, and it got dark, and I asked Sean to wax poetic about these fish he'd lost so much sleep over.
They emerge from the depths as a dark shadow behind your lure, and you never know when that's going to happen. And when it does, your heart stops, and then it immediately starts racing because you don't know what's going to happen. Is it going to try to eat my lure, and then now all hell breaks loose, and you have this, you know, potentially 20 or 30 or 40-pound fish on the end of your line you have to deal with? Or is it going to silently sink out of sight and back down into the darkness? And that happens 9 times out of 10. I know anglers who have raised a muskie. That's what they call it. I raised a muskie today, you know, meaning they were fishing, the lure was coming back. Muskie came up off the bottom or from behind whatever log it was hiding next to or something like that, inspected the lure, and then disappeared. And then you try to go after it again, and you try to get it to commit.
This is Erica Heilman with Vermont Public.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Liam Elder Connors and Howard Weiss-Tisman.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Elodie Reed.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.
The founder... Good start.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.